From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, open lines. Here's what's happening. At least a dozen buildings burned and more than 82,000 people forced to evacuate their homes as a rapidly fast-moving wildfire exploded across the drought-parched canyons in Southern California. The inferno that started out as a small patch of flame next to Interstate 15 in the Kenjin Pass had scorched 15,000 acres of the San Bernardino Mountains, but by nightfall it had churned up and over ridges and was descending into the Mojave Desert. It is truly out of control. The National Security Agency's website came back online Tuesday evening, as we reported, nearly a day after it went down. Intelligence officials today declined to comment on the outage. An unnamed source reportedly told Fed Scoop, that's a website, that it was the result of internal reviews, but it's unclear why the agency would engage in such a review without announcement, or why it would do so on a weekday when traffic tends to be higher. I don't believe it. A former naval officer and graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, David Voitz, is voyaging across America from Delaware to California along the American Discovery Trail and U.S. Highway 50 to raise awareness for a growing group of victims, including men, women, and children, being assaulted with electronic weapons. He started his journey in May and plans to take several months to complete the journey, educating the community wherever he goes while carrying a portable backlit billboard capable of scrolling text messages. I've got David on the line with us now. What a valiant effort, David. Where are you now?
Hey, George, I'm in a place called Gray Summit, Missouri. It's just a little bit west of St. Louis.
I know it well, very close. And, of course, 9 years in the Navy as well, so thank you for serving. Now, tell me a little bit, how did this all start? How did you decide you wanted to raise awareness to this kind of electronic assaults?
Well, like you said, I'm a former naval officer, graduate of the United States Naval Academy. I have a degree in control systems engineering. I worked in electronics warfare and nuclear engineering jobs as a service warfare officer. And while I was in the service, I found out there is an ongoing, non-consensual human experiment, and it's testing a human-machine interface weapon system. So kind of in practical terms, it's the same sort of technology that's used with the modern prosthetic limbs. So for somebody that has no background in this type of technology, if you go to TED.com, they have these TED Talks that stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. You know, 10 to 12 minutes, you can get some information about a topic you've never heard about. And if you go to TED.com and search technology that can hack the brain, there's six TED Talks in a playlist that within 1 hour you can get an understanding of exactly how this weapon systems work.
This is frightening, David. It's frightening.
It is. It's absolutely amazing in that, you know, with before the 2014 World Cup, they were able to get a guy that had been in as a paraplegic, was in a motorcycle accident. They built him an exoskeleton and were able to, through brain decoding, allow him to, through thought alone, stand up and kick the opening kick of the World Cup.
Unbelievable.
But on the opposite side of the spectrum, there's a group of people that are in a non-consensual experiment. They're calling themselves targeted individuals, and they are literally guinea pigs testing this technology.
David, there are hundreds of thousands of individuals in the United States that apparently may be subjected to this. How long has it been going on, in your opinion?
At least since World War II, they started the experimentation. There was an experiment called Project Chatter. It was a Navy experiment. And then they moved on to names like Artichoke and Bluebird. And then they went on into the MKUltra program that ran for a number of years. And then during the 70s, there was a congressional hearing on this topic specifically. And they sort of revealed some of the things that they were looking into. They said they stopped the experimentation, but it didn't. It just continued. And it's involved into what these targeted individuals are experiencing, which is kind of a remote interface with the bioelectrical system of a human being, you know, without their consent, without ever telling them that they're part of an experiment. And it's really topical now because there has been now five major shootings related to, you know, the people that are part of this test bed, the most recent one being the Baton Rouge shooting where the New York Times, CNN, and the Kansas City Star have all reported that that shooter was part of this, you know, that self-identified
part of this program.
As a targeted individual.
So you're almost halfway there. You're from Delaware to California. Are you walking, taking a motorcycle? What are you doing?
I'm walking. I have a. I've got my beagle with me. I've got a backpack.
You've become Forrest Gump almost.
It is, you know, and that's, you know, like people have, you know, commented on that, and, you know, that'd be great if we had people that kind of followed this cross country walk, and, you know, this is it's a new kind of weapon system that needs to be monitored in the same way that we monitor, you know, like atomic, you know, we have an International Atomic Energy Commission and atomic weapons inspectors, that we need to have an international agency that monitors neuro weapons. It needs to be public knowledge that this is a reality now. You can go to these TED Talks and look at that. You can look at what Jack Gallant has published out of his neuroscience lab there at the University of California at Berkeley. And, you know, people can just search that and see how they do, you know, basically mind reading. If you search Jack Gallant, functional MRI, mind reading, University of California at Berkeley, in YouTube, you'll come away with a few YouTube videos explain exactly how that's done.
Well, we're going to follow your progress. Yep. And when do you expect to get to California, David, at this
pace? I've got about 90 more days of hiking, and it'd take me at least until Christmas to finish that up without any break.
All right. And are you getting media coverage along the way?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. We're hitting all the small-town newspapers and radio stations, trying to create a historical record that, you know, there were people here in this time frame, 2016, that knew about this crime, that knew that this was happening. And they were trying to do everything they could do to bring it to the public.
Okay, well, we've got a link on our Twitter to your Twitter, Facebook, and you have a GoFundMe page. Be safe, keep walking, and we will periodically check in with you as we reach this 90-day, right around Election Day almost.
Oh, yeah.
All right, David, be safe. That's David Voigt. An incredible story, a story that we have covered on Coast to Coast for years now about electronic assaults. And a lot of people say, nah, come on, that's not happening. Here's a former naval officer, a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, who says it is happening, and he wants to tell the whole planet about it. So he's walking from Delaware to California, and as he said, he's in Missouri right now, so he's halfway there. What an amazing story. This story came to my attention. A friend of mine who's a great piano player here in the St. Louis area, Kurt Landis, he called me and he said, you've got to cover this guy. So I checked into it and got Tom and Lisa on it, and here we go. So we will periodically check in with the exploits of David Voigt as he walks across the country. Donald Trump, following weeks of really agitation over his advisors' attempts to hold back his style, moved to overhaul his campaign by rebuffing those efforts and elevating two longtime associates who have encouraged his combative, popular way. Stephen Bannon, a former banker who runs the influential conservative outlet Breitbart News, is known for his fiercely anti-establishment politics. He's been named Trump's campaign chief executive. Kellyanne Conway, a veteran Republican pollster who's been close to Trump for years, will assume the role of campaign manager. Now, Dr. John Curtis is with us. John, first of all, I want your take on this move. Sounds like a good administrative move by Trump.
I think it's sorely needed. I mean, for a long time. This is what's happened in this campaign, okay, and why Trump has had, you know, what looks like a bad few weeks. The Hillary narrative, and this is what folks don't really get because it's so subtle and so cryptic, is that everything that Trump does, this communication effort goes on from the Hillary campaign, discredits everything that Trump says. They parade experts out. And they get this avalanche of what they call gaffes going. These are not really gaffes. These are the Hillary campaign deciding the narrative of this, that Trump is a buffoon, Trump is ill-tempered, Trump is not suited. So this attempt is their challenge. I don't know if you recall back in 2004. In 2004, one of the venerable names in news reporting business named Dan Rather.
I know Dan. He's been on the show. He was on with me about a month and a half ago.
Okay. Well, Dan Rather was terminated from CBS by Les Moonves for infiltration into the newsroom of CBS through one of his main producers, Mary Mapes. that was had a direct line to the Kerry campaign through a guy who's a former senator named Max Cleland. Well, they published on the CBS Nightly News forged documents regarding a discharge of honorable discharge papers for George W. Bush in the 1974 Texas National Guard. These were forgeries. The reason why I'm bringing this up is that Rather lost his job. Today you have practically every major news outlet in cable, in network, and in print basically with direct ties to the Hillary campaign. And these people should be paying the same price.
All right, John, but I need you. I want you to focus, though, on this Trump move, and that's all I have time for tonight.
Yes.
You think it's a good move to make this campaign change?
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's an outstanding move to confront this barrage of pernicious propaganda coming from the Hillary campaign. It can only help Trump. And I think the idea that the narrative coming is that the Trump campaign is in chaos. This is a latchkey effort. He's going to, withdraw his campaign. It's all propaganda.
He's right on her tail in the polls now. He's made up the 10 points that he was behind. This is a horse race.
This is not only just a horse race, but I told you these polls are utterly worthless at this point because they're not calculating. These polls do not have the folks that really back Trump in this election are a lot of independent voters, and they're not really part of that polling. And I think there's going to be some big fireworks and surprises as we get closer, as this election proceeds toward November 8th.
All right, John, thank you so much. Yeah, I got to tell you, Donald Trump is coming back. He's coming back. A week bad, a week good. I mean, it's just amazing. Up next, we're going to talk about studies and poltergeists, obsession and possession. Stand by. Mark Stavish back with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Really looking forward to this, the next couple hours with Mark Stavish. He is a very respected authority on the study and practice of Western spiritual traditions. He has more than 35 years of experience in Western esoteric and also is the author of many books, including The Path of Alchemy, The Kabbalah for Health and Wellness, and also Studies in Poltergeists, Obsession, and Possession. And Mark, are you going to scare us tonight with this stuff?
Well, not intentionally, but most likely.
It could happen. It could happen. How have you been?
I've been great. It was so wonderful. I told your producer when she emailed me, I was just thinking of you guys yesterday. And then the email comes to inviting me on, and I thought, wonderful, wonderful.
It's synchronicity. There are no coincidences. It's all about
That's
synchronicity,
right.
To be sure. Lots to talk with you about, Mark. One thing I want to talk with you about, which is related to your studies, of course, a lot of people these days are beginning to wrestle with, does the afterlife exist? Does it not? What's happening? In your opinion, based on your work, do you have any doubts at all that the existence of the afterlife isn't real? Any doubts?
I don't. I don't have any doubt whatsoever that that there is some levels of survival of consciousness. And what that may be may vary from person to person. That's why we talk about such things as spiritual and esoteric practices, such as was outlined in Between the Gates. Last time I was on, I believe that was the book we talked about.
Yep.
How does consciousness survive death? Is it a de facto thing? I mean, when you die, do you just automatically go to heaven or hell? Or is it like in the various Buddhist or Taoist studies or even Hindu studies, are there different planes or levels of consciousness? And how does one get there? How does one stay there? And if possible, how does one move around freely? That's really the big question we're talking about.
Now,
is it friendly? In relation to tonight, is everyone who's dead friendly to you?
Well, that's a good point. Now, in Child of the Sun, tell me about the title.
Child of the Sun, Psychic and Physical Rejuvenation in Alchemy and Kabbalah, is a book that I wrote about a year or so ago, and it is a compilation of different practices. Meditative mostly, so your listeners don't have to worry about going out and starting an alchemical lab, but various internal meditative practices that they can do for not only increasing their physical health and with that longevity, but also their psychic awareness, their psychic abilities, as we would call them.
Are people's psychic abilities enhanced these days or kind of suppressed?
Geez, you know, that's really hard to tell. I mean, it seems to be all over the place.
We seem to have
some folks just having more and more spontaneous insights and awakenings, but they can't handle them. They don't know what to do with them. And that's part of what we talk about in, you know, studies in poltergeist, obsession, and possession. And at the other time, we see a lot of people who their ability seems to be suppressed because of just a lot of the various messages they're constantly getting bombarded at them through media or just day-to-day life. They just are not aware of what's really going on within their own mind.
Yeah, you know, Mark, too, part of the book that you wrote, of course, on the poltergeist, studies of poltergeist, you also mentioned possession. There are people out there that are getting possessed, and they can't stop it. What's happening to them?
You know, that's an interesting question because, you know, had you asked me probably 5 or 6 years ago about possession, I would have acknowledged it as, okay, it's real. We have a big historical record of it, but I wouldn't have given it as much attention as I did in this book, because it just seems that we're seeing more and more folks are having various kinds of psychic breakthroughs or breakdowns, and how do you recognize it? You know, how do you say someone is under the influence of, we'll say, hostile psychic influences or beings and not just having a psychiatric episode? And then there's the question, are they necessarily always separate? You know, when we talk about as above, so below, we're talking about a continuity, not a clear break. So when we look at illness, we often look at the emotional component when it's physical, but also we look at the emotional component of psychological illnesses. Well, maybe there's this other element too, and that's what we talk about in the book.
Now, this is volume 6, is it not?
Yeah, what we did is about 2 years ago is we started producing a series of highly specialized books. They're about 100 pages each, and they're monographs. So instead of, you know, well, as you know, when you write a book, you spend about half your time going over a lot of information that most readers already know. So what we decided to do is take the professional approach, meaning like, you know, any professional studies, and write specialized monographs and assume that the reader has a certain baseline of knowledge because they're interested in the subject. So we have right now 6 different monographs out there that readers can find on, you know, we list them on Amazon. But they're specialized like this, and there's a lot of information. They've gotten great reviews because they're really filled with information you can use.
Mark, kind of go through for us the kinds of spirits that you believe are out there.
Well, it's pretty straightforward. You know, when a lot of folks go into, we'll call paranormal studies or ghost hunting, they often come from a very kind of strict Judeo-Christian background. And unfortunately, they tend to look at things only in terms of there's humans, there's ghosts, there's angels, and there's demons. But if we look at where a lot of Judeo-Christian cosmology came from, particularly during the Babylonian captivity, and then we look further east, we see that they look at classes of beings. So, you know, we have saints. So there's holy people. There's dead people that are, you know, not ghosts that you're not communicating with. There's people who are ghosts, that is, they're attached to various things in this world. And there's, you know, they're unhappy. There's what we call angels,
Yeah. Even
archangels. There's what we call demons. And then there's what we would also call elementals, various kinds of intelligences that we don't quite get. And then where do animals fit in? I mean, I know a lot of people who've had dogs and cats, and when they pass over, they're convinced that they've had some experience with them. I know I have, and I know my wife has as well. So it's not quite as fixed as we'd like to think.
Yeah, I think a lot of us who have been animal owners over the years have had some kind of experience with the psychic realm with animals too. And it's really fascinating how that happens, Mark.
Oh, I think it's really helpful for folks. I mean, there's a strong, and again, it's a strong emotional bond that we feel with that creature. So there's probably, if we look at, you know, Tibetan or Chinese studies or Indian studies, there's probably a good 7 or 8 classes of beings.
Wow.
And of course,
at the top, we would call, and I use this term loosely, you know, enlightened beings.
All right, when we come back, I want to talk more with you, Mark, about this, about possession and obsession. Tell us the difference there. And next hour, we'll take phone calls with you here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you can expect some songs like that in Asheville, which is next week. My gosh, it's really coming up quickly, too. More information at our website, coasttocoastam.com, on our live stage event, August 27th in Asheville, North Carolina. Everything's at coasttocoastam.com. Just click the highlight reel. 13 seats left on the bottom, and then the rest up in the balcony. But you'll have a great time. We'll do a meet and greet afterwards. All our guests will be there. If you do not have a computer, here is a phone number for you to call the theater during business hours. 828-257-4530. That's 828-257-4530. Lots of folks are starting to come in from the St. Louis area, Chicago. So come on by. New York, L.A., come on by. And just go to coasttocoastam.com and look for the Asheville, North Carolina event. Okay, George Norrie back with Mark Stavish. His latest book, Studies in Poltergeist, Obsession and Possession, volume number 6. And Mark, what is the difference between what you call obsession and, of course, what we all know as possession?
Well, obsession is something we're all familiar with. It's really just kind of a compulsive thought or action. And, you know, it can be even induced in people. We see that happen all the time through repeated exposure to an idea or a set of circumstances. But what we're talking about here is obsession that comes from some extra, we'll say, malefic spiritual influence, something that attaches itself to a person and kind of influences them to do something that they might be inclined to do naturally, but it just makes it worse and worse. And the easiest examples of that might be, because it's usually destructive, by the way, would be something like drinking, excessive spending, some level of drug abuse, or anything that happens to be, like we said, emotionally powerful, but ultimately destructive to the person. So that's really what we look at in obsession. People can have good obsessions, right, like reading and exercising, but then it can go to the extreme. So anything that affects us to the extreme and has a negative impact on our life. And here particularly, we're moving out of that just psychological realm, but into that parapsychological realm where there's something else affecting us. Possession, on the other hand, isn't just something around us that's influencing us, but that takes up residence within the person. Since it takes possession of the person's body, suppresses their personality at times, if not completely, and then expresses itself through them. And that's what we think of as possession.
Okay, we hear a lot, of course, about demonic possession, the ability for these demons to take over human beings, literally take over their body. But some experts I've talked with, Mark, over the years have said that you've got to let your guard down. You've got to be inebriated or some, you know, under some influence where the demon comes in and takes over. What do you think of that?
You know, that's really difficult. But at the end of the day, when I've looked at everything and all the folks I've talked to and even the experiences that I've had myself and the experiences of other people, at some point in the game, the individual has to participate. They have to allow it to happen, and then they have to allow it to continue to happen. And that can even be through ignorance. But as we say, ignorance of the law is no excuse. At least that's the way it used to be, right?
Right.
So people have to begin to learn to understand the nature of their own mind, first and foremost. You know, you see that people who have these experiences very often, at least when they're legitimate and not just a psychiatric act or experience, they don't have a strong spiritual life, you know.
But they're not necessarily bad people.
No, they're not. But, you know, they're not necessarily what we'd call, you know, self-aware either. See, we're looking at good and bad, and that really has nothing to do with it. It has a lot to do with how self-aware are you. If you begin to have these compulsive thoughts and you say to yourself, you know, really, I don't think I should do that. You know, and then you begin to follow where it's from or where your environment is, have your friends changed, have what you're doing changed dramatically. you know, you become reflective, but if you just kind of go with it, you know, it's a passive person. Remember, demonic possession or even any of these spiritual parasites, as we call them, they go after low-hanging fruit, the path of least resistance.
Okay, and, so the most vulnerable.
That is correct.
What about a child?
We see a lot of it within children, at least reports of it. And I've always wondered about that because I think that we see children that are attacked, early teenagers, of course, with poltergeist phenomena, and women. And my belief is that because they live off fear. See, someone who is self-aware and understands their own mind is not easily terrified. And because strong emotions are required, that's their food. Think of it this way. Emotions are the food of the invisible. Okay? So what we do is if you threaten a child, what happens then? The mother gets involved and very excited and very concerned. That creates more food, and the feedback loop begins. So I think that's why we see a lot of going after children and teenagers, not just because of the vulnerability, but because of the emotional feedback loop it sets up in the family.
Mark,
if someone went after your children, how would you respond?
You don't want to know.
That's it. That's exactly it. And if they're a living being, it's pretty easy to take care of. But if you can't see them and you don't know what's happening, it just makes it worse and worse.
Well, it's got to be frustrating for some families that might have places that are possessed or haunted. Are there any particular areas, you know, Pennsylvania is a haunted area, but any particular areas that are more haunted than the others?
Well, you know, one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, we make the joke cleanliness is next to godliness, and there's a bit of truth to that. If you look at the nature of these beings, and to do that, you have to look at traditional systems, not just kind of be a random ghost muster, but you actually have to look at traditional metaphysical and spiritual and occult systems, and you see that every being has its kind of geography that it likes, right? Fish like water, birds like high places and air, human beings, we like a variety of places, but mostly solid ground. And then we look at these beings, too, and they go to what is emotionally appealing to them. Well, they're not nice beings. They're chaotic. They're fractured. So they tend to go to areas of great dissonance, but also filth. Okay? What is appealing to us is often not appealing to them. And that you see in a lot of the traditional teachings. So, you know, just like Feng Shui says, if you want to get your luck together and get your life in order, you know, have these particular objects in a particular order or place. The Indians have a system like that too. Classical Western astrology used to have it, and at least during the Renaissance. So keeping your house in order is a reflection of your mental state. So every ghost person, you know, I call them ghostbusters, but ghost hunters that I've talked to, they've always said that they've never really found a haunting in a clean house.
Interesting. What percent of people that believe that they're possessed might be actually whacked out, confused?
I think the great majority.
Yeah.
I think we're talking in the high 90 percentile, probably 98.
Maybe more, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the issue. For me, that's why I'm very hesitant to talk about possession, and one of the reasons we wrote the monograph is to look at these things. Some of the work that we worked off was a British psychiatrist who had done his writing in the 60s and seems to have been forgotten. And he had said, look, as a medical doctor who had experienced the Second World War and a psychiatrist, this was like the furthest thing from his mind, the idea that there could be such a thing as possession. And then he began to notice in his clients various phenomena occurring, various commonalities. And then he listed it so that he could say, there's something else out there that we don't understand. There is possession taking place. How much, how often, it's hard to say. But for me, the big thing is there has to be paranormal content. There has to be some kind of paranormal or psychic phenomena that simply cannot be explained. And in the book, we talked about the famous Rain Man phenomena of Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. in which here we have a fellow who essentially made it rain inside. And this
inside a building?
Inside, not only inside the building that he was in, but it was witnessed by the police officers present. The police officers would go on to be the chief of police. It was witnessed inside the county prison when he was held there. It was actually a joke. The guards watching him said, "Can you make it rain in the warden's office?"
Huh.
And only at that point did the warden go out and get a minister to perform an exorcism to have it done with. So for me, there has to be some very, very strong paranormal phenomena for me to suggest possession.
You have looked at some relationship between UFOs and paranormal activity as well. Tell me about the tie-in.
Well, I tend to believe, like Jacques Vallée, you know, that his school of thought more or less that what we're seeing with UFOs is extremely difficult to understand from the nature of our understanding of physics. Okay.
And dimensional. He doesn't believe they're coming from other planetary systems.
That is correct, and I tend to lean in that direction. I'm open to being proven wrong, okay? But until we can have some physical proof of that, which is hard to do, I would suggest that most of what people are experiencing is most likely interdimensional beings. And again, we're talking about what in magic or Western esotericism or in yoga or in even Tibetan Vajrayana or Taoism, you would call elementals, you would call ghosts, you would call demons, you might even call saints or who knows what else, some kind of enlightened being.
But that's not to say that there isn't extraterrestrial life in our universe. Correct?
Well, mathematically, what do they show? That there has to be. It's just a numbers game. There has to be extraterrestrial life, life beyond Earth on other planets.
Hey, Mark, there's a lot of negativity in the psychic realm. I mean, and people are being bombarded all the time with negativity. And as a matter of fact, I just talked to a former naval officer who's walking across the country. You probably heard him. You were on hold. Who believes that thousands and thousands of Americans are being bombarded electronically and testing and everything else. But a lot of people are being hit by negative psychic vibes from psychic vampires, people who are negative. How do you overcome that? How do you fight back?
And it's not just limited to those folks who do psychic vibes. It has to do with the day-to-day bombardment that they get, particularly now in the political season. You know, that constant bombardment of messages from various sources. And then they have that media source blaring at them or from their screen. You know, they open up their computer, and it just is a pop-up message. It borders on subliminal, okay? And then you have the people who you're around. And then sometimes you can't change that. You have to work with them, or they are a family member. So the best thing to do is to develop a good spiritual practice, a good meditative practice, so that you can understand your own mind, your own emotions, and you have control over them, and not allow them to just be activated and be reactive to the like push buttons that are going on. And that's how demonic possession, that's how obsession and possession take place. People are unaware, and then they just react rather than respond. You know, it's just habituated patterns. So any spiritual practice anyone undertakes is going to be extremely helpful to them in their daily life and then in not being concerned or worried. Because remember, fear is what they live off of, just like politicians.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Can people be possessed by something other than demons?
Almost definitely. And that's where, you know, the big issue that I have with a lot of modern ghost hunters is they have a very narrow philosophical view. I've met very few that actually have any real background in either occult studies and practices, East or West. And when you have that, you particularly see that the notion of possession by another human being is clearly possible. And, of course, in the Rain Man incident, which I talked about, the fellow claimed that it was his grandfather who was doing it.
That's amazing work. All right, so back to the Child of the Sun again. Is that is that tied into the book, the studies in poltergeists? I mean, is there a relationship there?
Not necessarily. I mean, it is in that Child of the Sun will give you a lot of meditative practices that will be very good for understanding your own mind and bringing health and harmony to your body and even developing some of these psychic clarity so that you can begin to navigate that psychic world of dreams and astral projection and clairvoyance that many people want. But then when they begin to get it, they don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to deal with it. And the best way is, again, just relax. Relax. You know? Whether for your physical health or to keep those, we'll say, parasites at bay. They don't come to relaxed people.
People who are spiritual, extremely spiritual, do they tend to be able to fight this negativity off better than someone who is not?
You know, I would say yes if when we define spiritual, we mean understanding their own mind. If we mean they're just extremely devout to a particular system, then we see that that system itself may be creating their obsessions and their demonic assault. Because we see some religious systems that are just obsessed with evil. You know, sometimes you wonder, are they more concerned with me going to hell or fighting the devil than they are with my salvation? So, but that aside, in generally, they're not the ones who are bothered.
Why not?
Because they have faith in something other than themselves.
Explain that a little bit more for us. Faith, you said.
The person who is vulnerable doesn't have faith in themselves. No one who's vulnerable, extremely vulnerable to these kinds of manipulations is what they are. These are psychological manipulations, no different than what your previous guest was talking about with MKUltra and all of that kind of thing. These are manipulations of the person's emotions and mind. It just, instead of from chemicals or electronics or advertising, it's coming from a, we'll say, psychic influence, meaning a mental projection from mind to mind. Okay? You have to be open to that in many ways. And if you're focused on something else, particularly something other than your own needs and wants, but in something that is harmonious and beneficial to others, which, you know, true spiritual systems help bring out in a person, you're not a good target for the most part. You know, you're a hard target, so they want, again, they'll go away. I have to have an avenue in.
Are you getting much support from outside forces or agencies with your work?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, do they agree with you? Do they fight you? I mean, are you bombarded by skeptics? What happens?
Well, you know, we joke all the time about how many technological issues can you have before we talk about this. When I was doing research, one of the guys who I really respect a lot, our phone conversation must have dropped 6 times just in one hour. Before, when your producer called me, we were having trouble with the line.
Oh, you know, the boy, phone. We don't need so, that.
Yeah, so it's those kinds of things, but you just don't mind. You get used to it, and that's just the way it goes. But so that's the kind of opposition, if you want to say, that's very real. At the same time, there are people who are extremely appreciative of this research and what we've done, particularly to clarify so many different areas in such a short amount of, you know, space, so that people can look at what is the psychiatric aspects, what are the psychological, what are the paranormal, what are the geographic, and where can I go for more information, too, so that I can begin to deal with this if I'm a specialist or, you know, just interested in the topic.
Have you concluded what this all is, Mark? What, I mean, the fact that we have ghosts and demons and possessions, what's it all about?
That's just it. It's just the way the universe is. You know, we're not alone in the universe. I mean, we're so selfish. You know, we think the metaphysics that we have is so self-centered. There's God, and there's angels, and there's demons, and maybe ghosts, and then there's us, and only, you know, and then animals don't have souls, and all that kind of narrow metaphysical view has done tremendous damage to people.
Well, they have. Mark, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take this quick break at the top of the hour. And let's take phone calls as well. Questions for Mark Stavish, maybe stories of possessions. Have you ever run into someone who was possessed. Share your story with us next on Coast to Coast AM.